real quick. I wasn't expecting that. Oh, boy. Well, it's good to be among you good folks this evening. Did I say I'm an alcoholic? I did, didn't I? I had a senior moment. I always feel like this is the best hour I can spend every day of my life. I really do. Because it makes everything else go better. And I look forward to this all day long. If I wasn't speaking, I look forward to the meeting all day long, too. It doesn't really matter. My sobriety date's May 5th, 1987, and I still respond very well to a meeting on a daily basis, though I don't always make it. I love the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I also know that you can't just recover off of meetings. You have to take the steps, too. I do understand that. But I'm a huge fan of meetings. And the longer you stay sober, the more you value your relationships here. We're here for a short period of time. And I try to stay out of conflict and bicker and judgment. You know, for me, all meetings, pretty much are good meetings. And in the last 15 years, I think I've been to one meeting that I might consider, I might not go back to because it really wasn't an AA. But all the rest have been fantastic because I changed my attitude. And if I go to an AA meeting with the spirit of what can I give to it rather than what can I take, they're all good in AA meetings. They all do the same thing. If you're sitting in an AA meeting and wonder why they didn't share the things that you thought that they should have shared when it comes to you, share what you thought you wanted to hear in the AA meeting. And be nice to people. That's really important. One of the lessons I learned early on in AA is I have to act better than what I feel. Yeah. And each opportunity I sit in an AA meeting gives me an opportunity to give to another alcoholic. It's been very important to me. Since I've been here, I haven't had to take a pill to change my mood. I haven't had to take a pill to go to sleep. And I haven't had to take a pill to wake up. Alcoholics Anonymous has worked very well for me. Haven't had to go to other fellowship, though there's things inside of me that probably could fit in five other fellowships. But I stayed true blue to Alcoholics Anonymous and the singleness of purpose. And I found myself very, the longer I stay here, I find myself very alcoholic. And I believe everything that goes on in my brain, thoughts, feelings, whatever, emotions, perceptions, is all connected somewhere to my alcoholism. And I'm not different here. I'm an alcoholic. Okay, I'm not different. I'm one of you, and that's where I connect with you. And I, for me, if I'm going to stay here and have longevity, I have to connect with you. That's the bottom line. I have to connect with you. If I don't connect with you, I'm done. I'm done. Because I won't find the value here. And I'll leave. Coming to Alcoholics Anonymous is not the answer. I'll show you that. There's lots of people coming here all the time. Staying here. And doing what's necessary to stay here, I think, is the real deal, at least for me. In fact, our good friends over there in the scientific field, in the pharmaceutical companies, they kind of just keep trying to find a pill to make me feel better. And they will never make a pill, I believe, that makes me feel the way I do when I'm among you people in the Center of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't think they can create it. There's something very special here that God created for us among each other. Recovery for me is Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything else I do in my life isn't part of my recovery. It's something I get to do because I'm in recovery. And I've got to be very clear about that. I sat in a meeting one time, and this guy, he didn't really like my statement. He was new. He was entitled to his own opinion, no problem here. And he would say that going to the gym was part of his recovery. And I thought, well, I bike every day, I run, I do all sorts of things. It's not part of my recovery. It's something I get to do because I'm in recovery, because if I was hungover, I wouldn't be doing it. And he kept saying that all the time. And one day I looked across the table, he wasn't there anymore. And I haven't seen him for the last 5 or 6 years. And every time I've listened to an AA meeting that this is part of my recovery, other than Alcoholics Anonymous, it seems when I look across the tables after a while, they're not there anymore. The only thing that's mentioned as a program recovery is in Alcoholics Anonymous is the 12 steps. There's nothing else that's mentioned. And I believe that the fellowship is very much a part of the 12 steps. Very much a part of the 12 steps. I think they're married to each other. They go hand in hand. I couldn't do one without the other, nor would I try. I've had great sponsorship here, and people have really influenced my life for the better. My sponsor, as we talk right now, my second sponsor, I think I've been with for, I think, you know, sometimes the dates elude me in the years, but I think it's been 19 years. And he has Parkinson's disease, and he doesn't know who people are anymore. You know, and he's another, like my first sponsor, Bob. They'll live inside of me till I die, and the newcomer or the person that's suffering AA will get a benefit of the things that they shared with me. Those are the things that I'm going to share with you. And my third backup sponsor that I love a lot, and I've talked to him for years, and we have a very close relationship in a lot of ways, told me he had throat cancer the other day. So we're here right now. I think it's really, these are important moments. These relationships are important. Billy's celebrating 17 years. I mean, when I was drinking, I never had any relationships that last 17 years. You know, I sponsored guys 21, 23 that have been with me almost the whole time of my sobriety. And that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I'm a guy that relationships with other people elude me. Okay? They confuse me. They baffle me. I'm not good at it. I'm too self-centered. And here I got a second chance at it, you know, taking the steps, showing up with you guys, having a sponsor, higher power, doing my prayers, trying to reach out and help another alcoholic, which is the essence of AA. I've been around the country, the United States and Canada, to lots of AA meetings since I've been sober. And I think AA is in really great shape. I really do. I think we're in real, really, really good shape in the parts of the country I go. And I go to all sorts of meetings. I go to clubs. I go to churches. I go wherever they meet. So I get a taste of it. But I think the one thing that we have to be careful as a fellowship is thinking that I'm coming here just to repair myself and fix myself so I can get better so I can go back out there. That does happen here. But I looked at the statistics on membership because I'm, you know, kind of a part-time historian. Every time I kind of get interested, I start looking up stuff, and I retain some of it. And I was looking at the year of 1935 with Bill, and he'd had this hot flash in the town's hospital. In the June of 1934, he was pronounced hopeless by Silkworth, and they didn't have much hope for him. And he had visited the hospital by December at least about three times. And finally, he took the steps, and he had this hot flash, which God kind of illuminated and touched him, and he knew that was God. And when he left the town's hospital, he was not trying to get his life together. He was trying to help out another alcoholic. That was his wish. And he carried the message of the hot flash and kind of turned off the drunk. It was a little bit too intoxicating on the spiritual side. And he didn't have much, he didn't have many results from that effort other than he found out through his wife that he got to stay sober. And Silkworth sat down and talked to him and said, I overheard some of your conversations. I don't think you're going to get the drunk on that way. You're going to have to dwell on the hopelessness of this malady, and you're going to have to talk about this obsession and physical allergy that I shared with you, and you're going to have to dwell on this till you get their attention. You're going to have to keep it on the drinking. And so when Bill got to Akron, as we know, and his deal fell through, and he ended up really was turning point in Alcoholics Anonymous. He could have gone ahead and could have got drunk. And instead, he swapped that out to help another alcoholic. He met up with Dr. Bob, as we know. And sometimes to think and to realize those moments in Akron, how great they were that Bill had had no success. There was no confidence yet. And all of a sudden, a guy's sober here for a little while. He gets drunk again. You could think of the fear running through you. And all of a sudden, Dr. Bob gets sober again. There's two in the world. And just to think of that moment, that Bill's by himself. He don't have no partner. Now all of a sudden, he's got one. And with that partnership bloomed confidence in helping out other people. They went next. They got Bill Dotson. They got Ernie. And then when Bill got back to New York, they got Fitz and they got Hank. And by the end of 1935, there was six people, and I don't remember if Ernie stayed sober or not, but there was six people that they saw that this thing worked. And before that, Bill had no evidence of it. Zero. Then I looked at the membership. Okay, so 1935, there's five or six people at the end of it that are sober. By 1939, the publication of the big book, they quote that there's about 100. The historians are somewhat backing that up now. By 1940, we have about 1,500 people. Within a year, we have 1,400 to 1,500 people now. Okay. By 1945, we have close to 13,000 people. And by 1950, we're closing in on 100,000. What we have to remember is that we're here to help out another alcoholic. It's not just about getting my life straight, getting things worked out, all these kind of conflicts or difficulties in life that exist for all of us, and some of them may never quite go away. They're there. We get more effective with dealing with it. But our primary purpose is to help another alcoholic. It's not about we're going to love you till you learn to love yourself. Have no qualms with it, no conflict with it, but I think it's the wrong message, even though I know a lot of people say it helps them. It would be a lot better to try to help people, to help them to take the steps to help somebody else go through it. And then you know what happens in their life? They get those things that they're looking for. Alcoholics Anonymous, I believe, is not a psychological approach. It's not about me. It's about taking the steps so my life gets better, so I can help you take the steps so your life gets better. I have to remember that. It's not a me fellowship. It's our fellowship. It's we. It's together. I can't do this thing alone. So, my alcoholism progression kind of runs in the idea that some of us have heard, and I've really liked, is that there was three stages to it. Mine fits in pretty well to that. Is the first stage was fun, okay? And it didn't last very long. It lasted my first drunk. My first drunk was a bottle of Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill, okay? And when I drank that thing down, I was having a lot of fun until I met my dad later on that night and was throwing up. And I often say that if the Boone's Farm Company is still around, and I looked on the internet, I Googled it about a year ago, because the two things that I drank early on was Mad Dog 2020 and Boone's Farm. And what they had in common is none of them had ever seen a grape. Okay? So on the inside label of Boone's Farm, what I really think they ought to put in there as you're drinking it down, you know, where they put the letters inside and see as it comes down, is warning. If you're 13 years old and you drink a whole bottle of Boone's Farm, you may be a future member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay. The next stage is fun with problems. I automatically went into that. Most of my drinking was fun with problems. Okay, a huge amount of it was fun with problems. I got arrested 11 times, but I was still having fun. And then the last stage of my progression of my alcoholism was problems. That I had drank the fun out of the booze, but I couldn't get my mind to remember that because my mind would keep coming up that there's fun there. Or, as the book calls it, that was my insanity. You know, and my insanity still lurks sometimes in the recesses of my mind where it say, hey, it'd be nice tonight to go out and drink six-pack of Heineken, smoke some of that new marijuana, and do a little bit of that cocaine from our friends out of the cartel. I heard it's quite good. But being restored to sanity is I don't see just one night. I see a nightmare. Okay, and that's what you guys have given me. You've given me the gift of the nightmare. So I'm not going near it. And I don't have the problem. When I wake up in the morning, I don't have a hangover. I don't wish I was drunk. I don't wish that there was some around. I don't have any of those at all in my life. I'm free of that, and that's one of the promises of Alcoholics Anonymous. Is I get I get freedom from the obsession to drink. Okay? I get free from alcohol, and I'm a daily drinker. You know, that's almost unheard of. You know, not among us, but that's almost unheard of in a group of alcoholics that I'm free from alcohol today, that I'm not in any serious danger of tonight going and drinking. So as I was growing up, by the time I was 15 or 16, I was in a lot of trouble. My attitude wasn't good. I didn't like school at all. I just didn't take well to education. And it just didn't look good on paper if I had a resume. In fact, the goal of my life when I was a younger kid, and the thing that kind of fascinated me the most, and when I was a kid, I first got a taste of it when I was about 7 or 8 years old, was the flower child that was running around the neighborhood that now I know was probably on LSD. At that time, I didn't know that. They were laughing real loud, and they couldn't stop laughing. And I was kind of interested in that. You know, and so by the time I'm a little bit older, really what I want to do in life, I want to be a hippie. It really fascinated me. So that's what I did. I grew my hair long, and I ate some microdot one time. That was the percent. That was LSD, if you don't know what it was. I grew a ponytail. And I had on the shirts and the clothing and the holes in the jeans and everything it would took, and the dingo boots with scuff marks, and I had a hat on, I had a derby, and my eyes were bloodshot, and I had Listerine, and I just couldn't think of anything. It was pretty cool. I mean, I knew I was sinking in quicksand, but it was pretty cool. The unfortunate thing was my dad was career Air Force, and he didn't think it was that cool, you know? He said things like, I didn't raise a daughter. And, I got sent off to get repaired, and good meeting people in kind of the psychological department to a certain extent. Misdiagnosed me with a psychological illness, which started with low self-esteem and ended with lack of confidence. And I kind of thought I had those things, you know, because I did have those things to a certain extent, but those were symptoms of something greater, which I'd find out later on. My alcoholism was nothing more, as you revealed to me in the big book, was a spiritual illness, but I didn't know that at the time. And the spiritual illness, the problem with the spiritual illness, it looks just like a psychological illness because the symptoms almost seem the same. Yeah. And so it's confusing for people that are trying to help us. That's why I need you people to reveal to me about your alcoholism, your symptoms, what you did, so all of a sudden I can identify and find out, oh, I have the same symptomology as you do. I'm an alcoholic. And the heart and core of my alcoholism, and I didn't know this at the time, was selfishness and self-centeredness. I didn't know that. It would have never dawned on me. I never even had heard that. Nobody discussed that in the bars with me. Hey, gee, you're selfish and self-centered, you know? I didn't hear about anything like that. I didn't even hear about resentments till I came to AA. I wasn't in the vocabulary. So I got misdiagnosed, and well-meaning good people, no fault of their own. And so I got better in a structured environment, which people like me, as alcoholics do, we get better in structured environments, and I need that kind of structure, and I got better. You know, I flunked out of school. I had a GED now. I'd finished the first year of college. Things were going a lot better. I assumed that I was able to capture that idea of self-esteem and self-confidence and all the other things that they kind of looked at me with, and I was on a roll. I'm telling you. I'd found that answer. That's what it was. I'm sure that's what it was. It was self-esteem and it was lack of confidence. Low self-esteem, lack of confidence. And as I graduated from that program that provided structure in my life and people helping me out, things that I needed, within 6 months I had 2 drunk driving charges. And within about 5 years, I had 7 arrests, all due to alcohol, every one. You know, every time I drink, I didn't get in trouble. But every time I was in trouble, I had alcohol and something else in my body. And so those things that seem to help other people and are the things that would make their life better only temporarily make my life better until I start going down the tubes again when I drink. I'm an alcoholic. And the psychological approach doesn't work on a guy like me. It's a spiritual approach that seems to hold depth and weight and hold its own water. And when I found out that I had a spiritual malady, and this was a spiritual solution, it made a lot of sense to me. And people told me that I have to take the actions here to get better. They didn't get into all these other things. They said those things will follow as you get into AA and take the steps, go to meetings and do the things we're doing. Those things will follow. You don't have to put your finger on them or call them any funny names. They'll follow because your life will progressively get better. And I believed them. So by 1978, I bumped into Cheech and Chong, Up in Smoke. God, did I like that movie. Wow. God, I looked on YouTube the other day. I was still fascinated by it. And you can tell where I was at. Just look it on YouTube. Watch it the first 10 minutes. You go, God, he was, whoa. I thought it was fabulous. Funny. Stoned. Nothing like it. And in the same year, I met Jerry Garcia, not in person, but on the stage, and it changed my life. And I did find hippie heaven for the first time in my life. I became a diehard hippie, tie-dyed, deadhead to the core. And that's what I wanted to do. I just wanted to see another show. And that's what I did for the next 3 or 4 years, and I right into oblivion, I'm telling you. The amount of drugs and alcohol in my system was absolutely unreal. When I look back at it, I'm surprised that I'm still alive. That was unreal. I tried to hold jobs. I couldn't hold jobs. I had the keys of my parents' house taken away. I wasn't allowed on the property anymore. My brother, who's my childhood best friend, would not talk to me anymore. It wasn't good. And as I faded from fun with problems into problems, it turned dark in my life for a period of years. And I just couldn't, you know, I was able to put down the cocaine. I was able to put down the ecstasy. I was able to put down the LSD. I was able to put down the marijuana. I was able to put down the narcotics. I couldn't put down the alcohol. That's why when I came here, I had no problem with being an alcoholic because I had put the other things down. Not that I didn't like them. I did enjoy them. But I could put them down. I couldn't get the Heineken beer. I just couldn't do it. You know? And Heineken, I just absolutely loved Heineken beer. I loved the taste of it. I loved the bottle. I loved that it was made in Amsterdam. What a great place. I mean, whoo. That's party hardy, huh? I just liked it. I liked everything about it except when my last bottle was on empty. And Heineken beer put me right in the center of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was sitting in a meeting years ago in the penitentiary, and the guy said, I'm not an alcoholic when I drink wine and beer. I'm only an alcoholic when I drink whiskey. I thought, well, no wonder you're in another 13 years, you know. Wow. No, I'm an alcoholic. It was beer. I tried the wine. I tried the liquor. I'm a beer all the way. And Heineken, it did the trick for me. It put me right in here. And in fact, I had a couple short-term visits with Alcoholics Anonymous through the judge court system, sometimes on my own because life got too bad and I didn't stay very long. I came and visited with you. I heard what you had to say. I was rather young. And I would think, you know what, I might end up where you guys are one day, but not yet, because I still got some fun. I'm not giving up the party yet. Are you kidding? This is fun now. Are you kidding? It's insanity. I'm glad the book talked about it as insanity. And it was, I mean. And so this time on May 5th, 1987, because the last job I could hold, which was barely, was being threatened, and I just didn't know where there was no place for me to go other than the streets, so I figured I would give one last attempt to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I came here, and that was May 5th, 1987, and I haven't left. And if you'd asked me the day before I came here, was this going to be the last time I drank alcohol? No, didn't even know. And so I came. And what happened is all of a sudden I discovered, now I didn't know this till I started to meet with you people, that you talked about a bottom. That's another conversation I'd never heard. It's not like I came to, hey guys, I'm in a bottom. I didn't know anything about it. And about 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks into that summer of 1987, I realized I had been in a bottom. I did. I didn't realize before I came here. I would have just said I've been in a lot of trouble. But I was in a bottom. And my life was bottoming out. And what happened in this bottom, it was absolutely incredible. And it's the thing I think that has to happen to most of us if we come and stay, is I lost the debate and argue. I lost it. The bottom took the debate and argue away. So if you told me to do something, which you shared, I've never been really told in AA. I've had a lot of people suggest things. And, hey, I think you ought to do this. Be good. I'm doing it. I just followed you. I didn't have any place else to go. And so when I was making amends to my dad in that summer, he asked me the question after I finished making the amends. And if I had another attempt at it today, I'd probably do it a little bit differently. That's the best I could do it. I made about a 5-minute amends after causing all this trouble to him. And my dad said, "You think Alcoholics Anonymous is going to work?" I said, "I sure hope so. We're both in trouble." I know I was. And so what happened as I was absorbing AA in that summer is another idea that had come up to me and it kind of hit home and registered with me was the idea of I had a progressive illness that would always get worse and never get better, that if I went back out and drank at any length of sobriety, I'd find myself in worse shape than others. I started to capture that in the fellowship. I started to own it inside myself. A progressive illness that always gets worse and never gets better. And periods of sobriety do not help the progression. If I go back out tonight, yeah, I might get away with it. But somewhere in the short period of time after that, several months following, I'm going to be in worse shape than I've ever been. It'd be just like I was drinking for 28 years. Of course, I'd be dead. I'd be in bad shape. And I got that from you. I captured it. I put it inside me. And as I was going to these meetings, you said, "You know what? There's got to be a point that you stop doing this for anybody else and your sobriety has to become you. You have to do it for yourself. It's an inside job." And I got it. I registered. It's an inside job. I can't do it for the job or the wife or the husband or the father or the mother. I got to do it for me. And that's what started to happen. Very quickly, I got into the steps. I was suggested that if you want to stay here, you need to get in the steps. It's great that you're going to a meeting on a daily basis, but you got to get into the steps if you're going to stay here. I got into the steps. I took the steps off the wall and had an off-the-wall program. But it helped me stay sober. I don't know what today I thought about it or shared about it, or I was probably quite mixed up, but the thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is the willingness is what helped me. It wasn't so much the application of knowing this, knowing that, knowing what's in the big book or the 12 and 12. It was the fact that I was willing to take the steps, so it didn't really matter how I did them. I could have done it awfully, but I got the benefit. Same thing is, I picked the sponsor. It doesn't matter if you pick the right sponsor that you have the rest of your life. The fact is, you get better when you pick a sponsor because you're doing what we suggest that you do. And if you stay here, you'll have plenty of attempts at the steps and plenty of attempts at sponsorship and plenty of attempts at a home group. I wouldn't get my knickers in a twist of how to pick the right home group sponsor or take the steps the right way right out of the bat, because you probably don't even know what the right way is. Just do it. And in doing it, you will get better, because the willingness is the thing that really helps us here. And that's what I was doing. I was willing to do things when I didn't even know what I was doing. And so I'm hobbling along, and I find myself down in Orlando, Florida. I'm at a convention, and this old man is selling speaker tapes, and I got up with him, asked for his number, and That turned into a sponsorship, and I would have never thought that turned into sponsorship, but over a period of months, that turned into really my first AA sponsor. And I'll always credit Bob Polk for giving me the gift of the AA convention. He was a convention taper, and my next sponsor was a convention taper, and my last sponsor, who has throat cancer, was a speaker at conventions. And he gave me the gift of the AA convention. And he said to me that, you know, you want to go to conventions the rest of your life. There's something good about these that are going to enhance your awareness of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what Bob always told me that was really important is, as good a sponsor I am, Al, you can't get it all from me. There's a big world of Alcoholics Anonymous out there. Just like the group here is a great group. Buckingham's a great group. Charlottesville, the meetings I go to are great groups. And Richmond is a great group. I go to lots of meetings. They're great groups. Can't get them all out of a great group. And this was Bob's whole thing, is that you got to step out. Can't get it from one sponsor. And I know in the early years it's real important to have one sponsor, one voice in your head, and I wouldn't argue with that. But later on, it's good to open up the channel some and to step out and talk to some other people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I tell all the guys, it doesn't threaten me one bit. I tell all the guys that I sponsor, have an experience. Call somebody, ask them. It doesn't bother me. If you want to take a fifth step with somebody, take a fifth step with someone. It's not, have an experience. Don't miss it. Don't just hang on to me. Open up the channels. And that's what I do. I open up the channels. And that's what Bob did for me. That's what Dick did for me. And that's what Don does for me. They open the channels up. So I'm not just in one train of thought that there's AA's bigger than this room. There's a big AA out there. I'll tell you that much right now. And I thought this year, since my one's dead and two seem to be dying. I mean, I don't think Dick's going to last two more weeks, but you can never put a time on it. But he doesn't know who anybody is anymore. He has latest stage of Parkinson's disease. And then Don, he'll be here for a while, but, you know, having throat cancer isn't funny. It's not funny at all. It's quite brutal, in fact. So I thought, you know, how can I dedicate myself to these guys' lives? And I called my friend down in Orlando, and I said, Lee, I said, where are you taping? He said, well, I'm taping in Las Vegas. I'm taping out in Colorado. I'm taping up in New Jersey. I'm taping up in Philadelphia. I said, sign me up. I'm going to go to five conventions till December so I can celebrate these guys' lives. That's where I found them. And I haven't done that in a long time. But I'm looking forward to it because I know a lot of people on the program and I know a lot of people that are going to be there. And Lee, who's my friend that was sponsored by Bob Polk, were the only two left that I know that were sponsored by Bob Polk. We have a real bond with each other. And I've got to stay in the center of this thing. I find out the length of time, it doesn't matter here. In fact, what I find for me, and I'm not a spokesman for AA, please don't think I am. I find for me, the longer I'm here, the more I need you. I mean, I don't need you less, I need you more. I'm telling you. I need more meetings than I ever needed. I need a lot of things. I can't taper off. There's just too much going on all the time. And this is where I get focused. I've been up against a lot of difficulty, and hopefully time I'll have a little time to share that. I have not been difficulty-free at all. I have found one thing, and as early on in sobriety, you know, I think a lot of us kind of go through a victim stage that is somebody else's fault. I think probably just about everybody somewhere in their sobriety. I'm not going to say everybody. I know there's always an exception in AA. Most of us go through a victim phase. It was mommy, she was drunk, or daddy wasn't home, or, you know, whatever it could be. And somewhere through the steps and through the process, we start getting free of the victim stage. And what I found for me, and for a long time kind of in the victim stage, I really thought that my mother's alcoholism had a huge impact on my life. And as I've stayed in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've been with other people that haven't had alcoholic parents, and I've been with non-alcoholics in my profession that have not had alcoholic parents, we have very similar problems. We have relationship problems. We have these problems. We have same fears. And I got free of the victim stuff. And I find that very useful around here because it's a very easy thing to fall into. Very easy. You know, that it is somebody else's fault, the fact that I am a little bit screwed up. And one time when I was 7 years sober, I told Bob, I said, Bob, I said, I finally broke the news. I let the cat out of the bag. I said, Bob. I said, I'm screwed up. He said, of course you are. He said, once you accept that in Alcoholics Anonymous, you're going to be a lot happier. He said, in AA, we teach you not to act screwed up while you're screwed up. That's meant a lot to me, you know. And that's been a saving grace, is learning how to act better than what I feel. So I made my financial amends early on. I started to make them. It took me about 13 years. When I was 8 years sober, I was at a turning point. I was in debt. I'd been in debt for a long time. I didn't know how to handle money. I was quite immature with it. And I asked the man that was a multi-millionaire. He was not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He owned the profession I was working in, and he was part owner of it. And in the winter, he never got a new jacket. He put duct tape on his holes. And he drove beat up trucks. And he lived in a very modest house. I said, this guy, I need to ask. So I went to him and said, hey, will you help me out? I said, I'm not good with money. I need to learn. Blah, 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 blah. I came up with all this stuff. And he actually helped me. And somewhere along the line, my boss came up to me, who had also made a lot of money in the real estate market in Dallas with his brother, Buku's amount of money. He said, I understand that you're doing well. We're trying to pay back these amends. He said, I'm going to help you out because I heard that you're paying six or seven different creditors out a month. He said, I'm going to lend you $7,000. You can pay the creditors off, and then you can send me a check once a month so you have one check. So we went to the bank, and the president walked up to him and said, what do you want? He said, I want $7,000 in his bank account. You can put $7,000 in a CD. And he turned to me and said, are you good for it? And I said, yes, sir, I'm good for it. 13 years sober, I got out of debt and never been back into it other than a mortgage. And last year, I paid my mortgage off. I was debt-free for the first time in my life. I learned how to manage money here rather than having money manage me. I learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous among a lot of people and good sponsorship. And that was a good feeling to be free of that. So there, I've had a lot of success in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had a lot of failure. I've had difficulty beyond difficulty. Probably I'm the creator of most of it. I would not be in conflict with you over that idea. Don't know any better sometimes. I'm going to create it. It's just who I am. I've never been entirely free of conflict. I've been more effective with dealing with it. I've never been free of difficulty. I think I got in a profession of difficulty. I deal with this emotionally disturbed kids and emotionally disturbed adults. I got about 80 people working with me. If you don't want to be driven crazy on a daily basis, don't get in this profession. That's why I do very well with a meeting on a daily basis. I want to thank you for that. I actually go to bed to have time to get a good night's sleep. And so I think it was about a year and a half ago. Well, actually, it started about 10 years ago, is that my wife and I were having difficulties in our marriage off and on, and it probably wasn't working. We probably ought to get a gold star for going as long as we went. We went a long time, but the compatibility had disappeared for a while. For whatever reason, the compatibility was just kind of vanished, and I think we just lived with each other, tell you the truth. And that was a very, very difficult thing for me to end up in a divorce with a 5 or 6 year old, because I didn't want to hurt him, and I probably would still be in there very unhappy, to tell you the truth, because I wasn't going to leave the marriage because of the child. I just wasn't going to do it. If I had a resentment every day, I wasn't going to do it. You know, the child, just a sweetheart, to tell you the truth, awesome. And yes, you can still raise kids successfully and go to a lot of meetings, believe it or not. And so I ended up in a divorce, kind of shattered everything, and it's quite brutal, I'll tell you the truth. I had a guy that I sponsored. I'm not going to say I sponsored. I was trying to help. I knew I wasn't sponsoring him. I think the doctors were sponsoring him. But I was trying to be helpful. He'd asked me for help, so I lent him my... what I was doing in AA. He seemed to follow it for a little while. And one day he called up and he said, well, I didn't get to sleep last night, so I called the doctor for a pill. I said, what? I said, what does that? You didn't get to sleep last night. I went 6 months and didn't sleep hardly. What are you talking about? I said, we go to more meetings. I said, that's the difference between you and me. I've completely given myself to the simple program, no strings attached. I go to a meeting. I call my sponsor. I ask God for help. I do the things that He asked me to do. I hope the guys I sponsor call me with problems, you know. I throw myself into that. And I said, you know, you got to completely give yourself to the simple program or you're going to have trouble. I said, you're 30 years without a drink and you haven't been to a meeting in 6 years. I said, that's a dry drunk and you're not going to get over that overnight. Those are brutal dry drunks. Bill called them the emotional hangover in the 10th step and the 12 and 12. There's a lot to that, an emotional hangover that doesn't go away because there's no solution. You know? And I was like, I think that was the end of the conversation. I haven't heard from him yet, and I hope he can call me back one day. I have no hard feelings, but I was kind of shocked. I mean, what? One night? And so I'm, you know, and so I love Alcoholics Anonymous and these people I've met. I met four of them in a row, and they all said the same thing to me. And they took their time out of their busy life to sit and talk to me. They said they all had divorces and sobriety. And I said, well, how do you do this thing? They said, well, you do without lawyers, Al. I said, okay, I don't want to do that anyway. That's a lot of money. And they said they can sign the same final paper. They have to do that, but you're not involved in the litigation with lawyers. What you do is you go to her and you ask her, what does she want? And you give it to her. I didn't say it was easy. Okay. Especially when you're in turmoil with resentment. It's coming out of your ear. What do you want? The house. This. Did it. And then they told me, you have to do nice things for her, whether you feel like it or not, and I didn't feel like it. You have to go make sure her lawn's mowed. That her trash gets to the dumpster. Anything that she needs for the kid. And whatever your child support is, you need to add more, because that's a figure. And you need to take care of her financially if she has any problem. That's not what they were doing. I know plenty of people. And then they told the amazing stories that followed that, how they helped their wives die later on in life, and their kids just loved them for it, and their ex-wives loved them as friends, and they were always welcomed in the house. And I was like, now that does sound okay. I'll take that. And I didn't do it perfectly, and, you know, I'm not a poster child for this, but I did do it. I did act better than what I feel. And it's worked out quite well. And who it's worked out quite well for is the kid. As they told me, the divorce isn't a problem that screws up the kids, because I work with kids all the time screwed up from it. It's how the parents act after the divorce that screws the kids up. And I didn't ever put that together. I've been in the profession for a long time. I didn't quite put that together. And this kid's happy. He loves his parents. He hardly ever sees us bicker. He has sometimes. We're human beings. He's happy. And about several months ago, she said, will you move back into the basement? We'll fix it up as an apartment. I want you to live back in the house with the kid. Where else but Alcoholics Anonymous? And I'm the type in AA, if I sponsor you, you're going to move back in with your ex-wife. I never stop you. I say, go ahead and have an experience. I never stop you. Yeah, I'm going to go date two women in AA. Please date both of them. Let me know how it's going. You know? Yeah, I'm not going to go to a meeting. I had a friend, I sponsor him. He goes to China every year. And the first year he went to China, he didn't go to any meetings for 2.5 months. And when he came back, I said, how are you feeling? Whew. Well, today he called me, and he's back. He goes to China all the time. He's in an advanced PhD program. When I say advanced, I've been sponsoring for 12 years. He's never got out of the PhD program. I thought those were 3 years. I can't. In fact, I don't think he's ever coming out of the PhD. It's advanced. It's beyond my advanced. So this time he said, I've been in Shanghai. I found all the meetings. They got a club down there. He said, I go to a meeting every day. He said, China's a whole different place when I go to meetings versus when I went 2.5. I said, that's what I've been saying, my friend. You have a spiritual illness. You need a spiritual solution. You need us. Okay. If I got down to what I had seen people I know in AA, got down to one or two meetings a week, I wouldn't have all the friends I have today throughout the United States. I go to Arizona, I go to Utah, I go to New York and Manhattan, I go to Orlando, Florida. I could just start naming the places I go. I've got friends. I've sat in meetings, and there's a lot of sick people in meetings besides myself. And there's people with lots of years that are ready to check out, or they've got down to one meeting a week. They haven't been in sponsorship or steps. That is just as critical for a guy like me to sit in those meetings and carry a message than it is anywhere else. They're in our own fellowship. And if I said, hey, I'm 28 years sober, let somebody else do it. I've already done it enough. I'm going to sit at home, go to two meetings a week. I'd be cheating myself, not you. I can't tell you the wonderful experiences that I've had, that people are 33 years sober and they were down to one meetings a week and they were going nuts in their life. I said, no, you can't do that, 30. You can't do that. Try this. After several years, they come up and we're good friends. They say, you know what? This thing works. I said, I know it does. You got to be vigilant. The longer you're here, you got to be more vigilant. It's not less. Because there's something that Bill talked about in the 10th step. It was big shotism. What happens in big shotism is kind of like two-stepping, that you have 1 and 12, but the inner parts of the steps really are kind of, they're somewhere hazy back here. You know, you're not really in. And what happens over a period of time, you start congratulating yourself that, hey, look at my life. No difficulty here, guys. Man, I'm doing good. Got a lot of money in the bank. Man, got a lot of friends. Get along great with the wife. That's dangerous. And Bill says, I can't. It's only by the grace of God today that I have these things. And the only reason I have these things in my life is the only reason I have anything in my life is because of my relationship with Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a relationship with God prior to AA. Could not get out of the county jail. So I knew when I got here, it wasn't just a relationship with God. I'd have to have a relationship with you. You told me the blocks were the same. The blocks were selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. The blocks, the people, and God are exactly the same. When you start removing the blocks, you get an open door to both. But I need the open door to you to be able to become aware of those things. Because the more that I'm with you, the more aware I become of a higher power. And the less that I'm with you, the more aware I become of myself and what I'm not getting in life. And what the old timer told me, that there was absolutely nothing here to get. There was only things to give. And then we give our time. And we show up at these meetings night after night, day after night. We carry this message to the alcoholics. We find all sorts of people in the meetings that we're able to benefit both ways. We benefit and they benefit. Bill said, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you do not want to miss it. In fact, he gave us our call of duty in the 7th chapter. And the 7th chapter is working with others. It doesn't say working on others, including ourselves. It's working with others. It says, nothing so much ensures immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. This works when other activities fail. And going to meeting consistently after consistently and sponsoring people consistently and bringing them out of the meetings and taking them to the steps consistently is intensive work. And what happens in this kind of a chaotic, self-centered life or whatever, the stuff coming on, it makes sense. It gives me an anchor. I feel good today. I felt good when I woke up. I woke up, I got a call from Billy, I got a call from Pete in China. I got a call from Charlottesville. I got a call from over here in Richmond. You know, then I went and bought my kid a BB gun and taught him how to shoot it. I spent 2 hours with him. Then I got on my lawnmower and I mowed my lawn. It's a pretty big lawn. I live next door right now to my ex-wife. There's a cow. There's a horse pasture that separates us. And when I was walking out of the marriage, not walking out, but the divorce was happening. My next door neighbor came to me and said, you know what? I was praying with my wife the other day what to do with the hunting cabin. He said, we know what to do with the hunting cabin. And the hunting cabin's next door. Okay? no matter what the difficulty is in AA in life, when I sink myself into AA, God intervenes in the difficulty. Don't connect the dots. It's spiritual. It's not logical. You dive in, and all of this mayhem that's swirling around in your life in difficulty, over a period of time, it starts making sense and it evens out. Alcoholics Anonymous is not about happy, joyous, and free. It's about a primary purpose. Okay? It's not about happy, joyous, and free. Happy, joyous, and free is the breather between the rounds. Okay? Okay? And all of us will go through meat grinders in our life because our character defects need the spiritual light. Okay? Because I got them. All right? And when I'm in it, I'm taking the steps, I'm writing the inventory, all that kind of stuff. Sometimes, you know, you're going through the actions, it's almost like going through the motions, and you're like, well, maybe I've gotten too old for this. AA is not working like it used to. It's not as quick as I would like it to be. And then all of a sudden, wow, there it is. And there's a promise that has been more meaningful to me than ever. And we've all read it. I saw it 100 times, and then I captured it. And it's one that, I love all the promises of the ninth step that we read in the meetings. They're fabulous promises. But the one that means more to me, and I see it clearly in my life and clearer, is we intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. That means that whatever's going on in your life, you'll get through it with us. And God, and these steps. And trying to work and help out another alcoholic to recover from alcoholism, because that's our purpose now. There isn't any other purpose. That's it. And when I look at life that way, I don't have to worry about all the other stuff. I know what my purpose is. And when I'm diving head into my purpose, all the other stuff works itself out. And where I stand today when I woke up this morning is not where I was a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago. It's an entirely different place. And I felt good waking up. And I got to tell you, there were some periods there when I woke up, I said, oh my God, I got to face this again. I started calling it hell. And I'd go down to Florida and hang out with my brother in Orlando or Clearwater or down at Tarpon Springs, wherever he was at. I'd get on the bike path. I'd run. I'd do my bike. I'd go to a meeting every day. 4 clubs down in Tarpon Springs and Clearwater. They're miles apart. There's meetings all day long. It's like luxury. You don't have to drive 20 miles. And so I was down there and I was feeling good. I was getting relaxed. And my brother said, you ready to go back? I said, nah, I got to go back to hell again. I know what's waiting for me as soon as I step in the work or I step in. And you know what? For now, hell doesn't exist anymore. And there's only one reason. You. You don't know how much I love you. You don't know. I'm telling you. With your gripes and your imperfect, your character defects, the fact you fell off the whatever, you know, when you show up and I hear you, I know you, and I find out that we don't have a partnership here in virtue. We have a partnership in character defects. That's the union. Okay. We ain't quite right. And that's the beauty of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I used to be scared of that. And now you can see it in me. I'm not quite right. All right. I need you too much. I'm not quite right. We need each other. It's valuable this time. I'm telling you, these relationships are valuable. Billy, 17 years. Billy was a head case when he first started. Imagine those phone calls. We were talking about victimization. No. I'm going to sit down. It's just one of those stories of the more meetings. And I've told Billy this before, but I'm going to tell you and Billy, because I love Billy a lot. We like calling him Hillbilly now. But I look forward when Billy calls me now. We have a lot of things to share with each other. But Billy, somewhere along the line, had gotten in his mind that a few meetings a week would work. I don't know how many he's going to, 2 or 3 or some time ago. And I'm going to tell you, when he called on Sunday, it went on and on and on and on and on. And finally, Billy said, I'm going to go to more meetings. So Billy said, and I said, Billy, we're not judgmental towards people or meetings anymore. We go and we make friends wherever we go. Okay? We can't have bad meetings in AA. It makes us not go to meetings. That's in my head. That's not in reality. So Billy started going to 5 or 6 meetings a week, 7. And the Sunday calls would come, and they were awesome. All of a sudden, we're talking about things, you know, we're talking about NRA or whatever, you know, whatever the conversation is. It was like the drama disappeared in the meetings. And that's been years now. And it's like when Billy calls now, he's happy about this. It's not that any of us are free of difficulty or don't share problems. We all do. Well, at least most of us. Again, there are exceptions. But it's a whole different frame of mind. And I found that in myself, and I found that in a lot of people. You know, when there's great difficulty in life, it always calls for more meetings. And that's where we get our what we need. So I want to thank you for this 55 minutes, and we're going to let Billy come up. He's going to give somebody an anniversary chip, and then I'm going to sit down, and he's going to call me back up, and I'm going to give him his 17 years.